Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Yeah, it's that time of the week again where we sit down and we talk about mental health. There's loads on the agenda when it comes to mental health each and every week, and there's plenty to talk about this week as well. Now, we always say if you listen to the programme and you want to share your own story, get in contact with us here at the station. And, you know, if it's somebody who wants to come on and discuss their own particular journey and their own battle with their own mental health issues, that's absolutely brilliant. Maybe you're organising an event in support of a mental health charity. Tell us about that too, and we could give you a mention on the show as well. Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. My email address is mick@radiocity.co.uk. That's mick@radiocity.co.uk. We're also up and about on the Facebook and the Twitter as well through @RadioCityTalk. And we always say if you want to get in contact, use any of those means to get in contact with the show. One man who did just that is a guy called Jay Wheeler. Now, Jay's in the studio now.
Hi, Mick. There you go, Jay.
You reached out to us. We reached out to you. And now you're here on Mental Health Monday to tell us your story. And it is a story which goes on a real journey. And
it is, yeah.
It's a story which, as well, which I think is one which has got echoes of different elements we've spoken about on the programme before, because the various and the varied nature of your journey, but also feeds on from a conversation we were having a couple of weeks ago about coming out of the armed forces, the return to Civvy Street, as they call it. And actually, your story fits quite nicely into that, because you experienced the return, the return to Civvy Street, as many, many soldiers do. And how you reacted to it, I think, really gives us an insight into sort of what the mind is capable of and how the mind is capable of recovery using the arts, which is where we'll move to on your journey. Yeah. Can we start with your military career, though? Because you were in the military a long time.
Yeah, I was in the army for 15 years in total. Within those 15 years, I did two operational tours of Kosovo, two operational tours of Iraq, and I did one operational tour of Afghanistan at the end of 2012.
So this is very much within recent history, you know. It's a little bit of time ago, but it's modern conflicts that people will have been aware of. What sort of roles were you undertaking when you're out there?
When I was in Kosovo, we did peacekeeping missions. So it was just basically just kind of just helping out locals and, you know, schools and things like that. My first tour of, and the second tour of Kosovo was pretty much the same. My first tour of Iraq was a bit of an eye-opener, because that was the first time that I'd been away on operational tour and had been in situations where we had been shot at and we had the threat of IEDs and things like that. So it was, but the second tour of Iraq was a lot more intense, because we were fighting insurgents that were, you know, they were laying kind of secondary devices, IEDs, and they were using RPGs, rocket propeller grenades. So we kind of we were tested a lot more on the second tour of Iraq. But like I say to everybody, Afghanistan finished me off, because when I was in Afghanistan, I've never experienced so much death and so much hate in a short space of time. And, you know, people say, well, you know, you kind of join the army for this. And I didn't join the army for it. I joined the army to try and make a difference in people's lives, wherever that may be. Due to Afghanistan being like the worst, I lost a really good friend and colleague when I was out in Afghanistan called Zach Kuzak. He lost his life to small arms fire. But every day, you know, we were getting attacked by the Taliban. We were out. My unit was out in the green zone, which was more a lot more active than anywhere else, you know, within Afghanistan. So, yeah, it was daily accounts. We'd be shot and, you know, and you'd even get civilians that had, you know, been caught up in an IED and lost a leg. And so you're kind of looking after these guys as well. And, you know, most of the time, everyone that we kind of dealt with in that situation died. Either died at that precise time or, you know, died.
So at what point was it that you thought, and you say, you know, Iraq, you dealt with various things, and particularly the second time around, but at what point did you think this has gone beyond the bit, beyond the moment for which I was prepared?
Afghanistan.
Was it just from day one in Afghanistan?
From the moment I landed, we were given like a week's acclimatization period. And then we were kind of like split up and sent out to different areas of the British area of operations in Afghanistan. But yeah, it was just, I think at that when I came home, put it like this, I came home And within a space of 6 months, I remember just, I was feeling like quite anxious all the time. I was feeling angry a lot of the time. I was feeling guilty. I was definitely feeling guilty. I think because I'd survived so much, but seen so much that other people didn't, you know, and that kind of maybe rattled my cage. But literally I came home and I stopped going out. I stopped socialising. The only time I would leave my home would be at like the early hours of the morning or when it was really dark and I knew it wasn't going to be that busy. And I'd literally just go literally to the garage by me, get some cigars and stuff and come back home. Other than that, I never left that apartment. My blinds were always closed. And I just started going through this phase of not eating and kind of self-abusing myself in a way.
Were you aware that you were doing that? Did you just think that this was a reaction and it's kind of an instant reaction to what you'd seen and what you'd witnessed?
I remember when I came home from Afghanistan and like I said, it was all starting to show up in my life. I just felt completely lost, and I got to a point where I didn't want to be alive to actually deal with what I was going through as well. And I'd never been through it before in my whole entire life. But it really broke me down, and it brought me, you know, there was nights I just wouldn't sleep actually as well. And I kind of resided to a couch in my living room. And from that couch, I would literally store bags and bags of rubbish. I used to store bottles and bottles of urine. There was flies and stuff in the apartment. But what I'd done, I'd taken several overdoses in you know, with the knowledge of not waking up from it, you know, that I'd taken several overdoses. And I'd been admitted to hospital several times. But there was that period when the last time I was admitted to hospital that I don't know, I just started living like, it was almost like I'd said to myself, right, you can't kill yourself because it's not working. So look at it from, approach it from a different manner. And what I did, I starved myself, basically just constantly starved myself and didn't look after myself at all.
So these were many different attempts at suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
And so your mindset at the time was, I don't want to be here anymore. I can't find a place for myself anymore.
I'd seen that much hate, you know, and that much death. And then when I came home, you know, and at that time as well, you put the news on, and every day, you know, a British soldier or, you know, was getting killed. And I remember getting home and I was like, my God, I can't escape it. Like, it's, you know, and you come back with what you've experienced, and then it's, you turn the TV on and it's there, I just wanted to not, for that reason, I just thought, you know what, the world's gone backwards. And that's how it felt to me.
Was there a support network for you, either within the family or within the military itself?
No. I mean, when I was medically discharged in September 2013, so I'd been on a sick for a year. But within that year, I'd been admitted to hospital about four or five times, easy. And then what happened was, literally, because I was dealt with by the NHS, and because I was at home at the time when I took the first overdose and stuff, the army said, right, we're going to leave you in the hands of the NHS. You know, I just went, okay, whatever, I just went with it. But literally, come 2013, on the day of being medically discharged, that was it. I didn't hear for head or tail from the army at all. I know that they'd had correspondence with like the crisis team in Liverpool and stuff like that, but they never came back to me. And it was literally, it was about a year and a half ago when I was living really bad and, you know, like with the bottles and the rubbish and stuff, that, it was like a blessing and a curse, but I got burgled. And when I got burgled, I kind of called the police straight away. So the police came, and the uniform police were more interested in what they'd walked into this apartment, you know, just with all this mess and stuff. And
And as a result of that, of the burglary, they notified the burglary section at St Anne Street Police Station, Liverpool. And it was those guys that came up and saw me, took statements to reference the burglary, but also left and got in touch with military charity, SAFA. And what SAFA did, SAFA then came over to mine, and basically we started this process of kind of getting my life back to normal, I suppose, you know, with just, they applied for funding and stuff like that for me from, and it was absolutely fantastic, and we got all this funding, and we got to redecorate my home and stuff like that, you know. But yeah, so since I was discharged, I had no, there was no communication between me and the army from that point up until SAFA were notified by the police.
And it was that intervention which marks the fork in the road.
Yeah, it does. And it's very hard when you're going through depression, because you very much don't want to reach out to people, and you very much can't. You can't find a way out, so you just don't entertain the idea, you don't entertain the thought. Like I said, I'd been living like that for close on a year and a half, easy. And, you know, the only people that saw how I was living was at my... I have a CPN, a community psychiatric nurse, and obviously the staff are rep, you know. So, yeah, it can be hard to reach out, but... because I didn't at all for a good while. And it was almost like I was kind of cutting off my nose to spite my face type thing, you know.
Well, I was going to say that obviously the military life has got this sort of regimented element to it in terms of everything that you do, that you're told where to be and when to, how to do things and so on and so forth. Did you feel like the couch life that you had was almost the complete opposite to it?
Actually, to be fair, it almost doubled in stress, because when I did get medically discharged, it was still in the early stages of my depression and stuff like that. So then as well, I also had to deal with the fact that now I'm actually discharged from the army. So you've got that going on in your head, as well as all the other stuff that's going on in your head.
That was the concerns about what you do with your life, what you get a job.
Yeah. But also as well, I spent too much time not thinking about that. I spent a lot of time thinking about how can I harm myself to not be it. That was almost like, I used to hate going to sleep. I used to hate nighttime. Its advantage was I could go out and get supplies. The disadvantage was that nighttime is always probably, I would say, early mornings is the worst time. You know, when your depression really kind of, it's really hard to kind of control it. So sometimes, you know, you want to stay awake through it. It's crazy.
Were you reliving things that you'd seen in your head? Was that sort of a constant factor within your life, the things that you'd witnessed while you were on these tours?
Yeah, because again, you know, I'd seen things that you can only train to a certain point. You know, I say this about all sorts of, you know, with the police and the fire brigade and nurses, that you can only train to a certain point. But then after that point, reality will kick in. And it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how strong you think you are. If depression wants to get hold of you, it'll get hold of you. And it doesn't just get hold of you. It drags you down, literally, you know, beyond belief.
You got a diagnosis of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Who did that come from, and what stage along the journey was that?
That PTS, that diagnosis came from just literally prior to being medically discharged. I was assessed by a military psychiatrist, and it was him that diagnosed me with PTSD. But at that time, I'd already been in the care of the NHS anyway, you know.
So the military knew.
Yeah, the military knew, that, you know, but yeah, there was nothing after a certain point.
Your story goes on a slightly different path now, because people will be listening to that and thinking, wow, where's Jay's story going to go from here? Because, you know, you've gone from the military life, then you've experienced terrible things, and then suddenly you're on your own, you're back on Civvy Street. It's interesting, actually, there, even talking about going down the shop buying food, you talk about going out buying supplies.
Yeah.
Which is that, you know, you've basically still got
the sort of
almost the military mentality there. The post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis as well, and multiple suicide attempts. So at this moment, then, you're in a dark place. You're presumably you're looking for, and you talked about that the military charity came on board.
Yeah.
Were you looking for, we talked about looking for a way out before ending your life. Were you then open to the idea of a different path? Open to the idea that somebody might be able to offer you something that might put you on a different journey?
At the time, my way of thinking couldn't be challenged at all, you know. But it was when I got admitted to Broad Oak Psychiatric Unit, Broad Green Hospital. And that was my first admission. So I was in there for a good couple of months. And whilst I was in there, the staff in the OT department, occupational therapy department, said, you know, why don't you do some art and stuff? And I was like, you know what, I don't even want to be here, let alone do some art. You know, how is that going to help me? And like you said, I mean, I spent 15 years in the army. I never entertained the thought of art any part of my life. And you know, several days passed, and then I ended up going down there. And again, they encouraged me to use art as therapy. So I said, you know what? I'm here for a while. I'm going to do it. Now, this was the first stepping off mark for me. And so what I wanted to do, I thought, well, I'm just not going to draw a tree and whatever. I want to base it on what I've experienced and what I see is really important in our society. And that's the word love. So I started doing things based around creative ideas around the word love. And I got a buzz for it. And it was really nice because in a way it helped me to explain how I was feeling that day through art, instead of, because you find when you're in hospital, you're constantly talking to psychiatrists and doctors and they're asking the same question after, you know, same repeat every single day. So in the end, I got tired and I went, you know what? I'm going to express how I feel through this artwork.
And had you ever done artwork before?
No, never done artwork before. I mean, I did art when I was in school, you know, like many, many moons ago, but it never interested me at all. And like I said, spending 15 years in the army, you know, I didn't find, there was never an opportunity to go, oh, I think I'll go painting, you know. But so when I left on discharge from Broad Oak, the guy that used to run the Broad Oak department made me a stencil. I said, I want a stencil. And it's got to say love. And he made it for me. And then what I did, I started going out. And I used this also as my own therapy, because I found that doing the artwork and opening up with my artwork made me feel a lot better, you know. And it kind of brought a positive vibe to my life as well, which I'd been missing. So what I started doing, I started going out and going down the streets of Liverpool and I started spraying this love tag, you know. And I don't deface people's property and stuff unless they ask me to.
You became a vandal.
became a beautiful vandal. That's what I like to say, a beautiful vandal. And so what I did, because I really enjoyed this, and this was now getting me out of my apartment. This was now getting me out in some fresh air and stuff like that. And it allowed me to slowly interact with society again, because I kind of lost it in a, you know, major way. So I started doing the love tag. And then,
can I ask you, were you doing that at the same sort of time of night that you used to go out for your supplies?
Yeah.
So that was still your safe time.
Yeah. That was my escape. That's my escape time, you know, when I'm doing that. And I don't think of anything else but that. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to start up a Facebook page and I'll make it about this, my story and how I've come to find art and see how it goes. And it's over the last couple of years, it's honestly, the support that I get on social media is amazing. In 2013, just before I left, was medically discharged from the army, I had a welfare officer, and he said to me, you know, there's this art award that the military do, and it's for soldiers that have come to find art whilst being admitted to a psychiatric hospital and have carried it on. And he said, do you want to go for it? And I was like, oh, you know, I'm not really into that. And it took a good couple of weeks for him to persuade me. And then he persuaded me, and I sent off a little bio and photos and stuff. And literally 2 weeks later, they got in touch and said,
you've won the Templar Art Award 2013, which then encouraged me to do even more.
Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
We've got a special guest in the studio who's got a fascinating story, and he's telling it so very well. Jay Wheeler is with us, contacted us through our Facebook page to talk about what he'd been going through, living through, and how his life has turned around now. Jay, it always fascinates me when people have had these terrible circumstances in life, been at the lowest of the low, and yet today you're talking about this in an open and honest way. Do you feel like you come to peace with the dark times that you went through?
It's taken a while. It's taken a very long time to get to this point where I can acknowledge it. You know, I can acknowledge what I went through. I can acknowledge what I did to myself. It takes a while. But, yeah, you know, I mean, the fact that I've got a solid group of friends, really good friends, you know, that have been there since day one and ups and downs with me. I've got, I've got my home back to being a home again. I've got the artwork, Love Art Global, and I've got, which is fantastic, I've now got a dog. She's a British bulldog, and she's called the Fudge. Well, I call her the Fudge there, but I got her from Freshfields Animal Rescue in December last year. And what she has done now, she just fills that void that was missing in my home. You know, so I'm definitely at a much better stage in my life than I was at least a year and a half ago.
Now, you've been talking about your Love Art Global work, and you got a T-shirt on as well.
Yeah.
The love stencil that you took away from your art sessions at Broad Oak, and how you use them, and how you were beautifully vandalised, did we say?
Beautifully vandalised, yeah.
Chris Moore on Twitter says, Mick, I've seen the love stencils in St. Rupert's Park while jogging. Are they his?
Yeah. They're mine.
The city council will be on to you. There you go, Chris. So there you go. So people are seeing these. What is it that people will see when they see some of your artwork?
Well, when they see, they see just this word that says love. You know, it's in a nice kind of shape stencil and stuff. And basically what I do, I put it on like corners of roads, in alleys. Sometimes I do it in busy places because I want people to kind of see it, and all I want is them to see it and just for a few seconds be reminded how important this is. And it's not, you're looking at a word, but it's bigger than just a word, you know. And the nice thing about it is I do get lots and lots of messages through my social media from people that find these love tags and say all these remarkable stories. And I've just got to share one with you that I had a couple of months ago, and a lady she'd recovering from an heart attack, and what she used to do, she used to go to St. Andrew's Gardens and just sit at the bench and just kind of, you know, contemplate life. And she saw this love tag, and she said that whenever she sees it, it makes her realize just how lucky she is. And that's fantastic for me, because I want people to kind of just, because we are going backwards, we need to be going forwards, you know. And in this current society as well, I think it's very imperative for what I do. And I think, and people get it. You know, people, I've got support on all these social medias, which people get, and they get why I'm doing it.
Well, I was going to say, because when you talked about when you were in your darkest places, you were putting the TV on, you'd witnessed those terrible things, you watched the news, and you saw more terrible things were happening, and you felt like there was no happiness in the world.
Yep.
Your artwork, whether or not you knew you were going to start doing it, but your artwork essentially became about spreading love.
Yeah.
Putting love everywhere.
Yeah.
That everywhere would see.
Yeah. And I mean, in the last 2 years, I've travelled the country doing it. I had two good friends in Blackpool who set up a crowdfunding page for me. And then supporters of what I do on my social media donated to this crowdfunding, and they got me out to Rocklaw in Poland to do the love tag, and I did several love tags whilst I was there, and that was the people that got me there in the first place.
Wow. So do you do pieces of artwork that are portable?
Yeah, I do artwork, and what I do once I do the artwork, I throw it up on my social media and stuff like that, and then if I sell it, then all the money goes to either Broad Oak OT department and or different other charities. I mean, at the moment, I'm doing something for Freshfields. And yeah, so I like to raise money
I did some a few months ago for the Brain Charity as well, and so I like doing things for charity. I just think it's a good thing, and it's that's what Love Art Global is. It's about love. It's not about anything else.
I guess you were a soldier.
Yeah.
The word soldier, people draw, you know, a million conclusions about what that is, but it's kind of like a good old-fashioned job. You yeah. are a soldier. What are you now, do you think?
I'm Jay Wheeler now. Yeah. And like I was saying this to my friends when I went to Poland, I'd never flown as Jay Wheeler before. I'd always flown as Trooper Wheeler or Corporal Wheeler, you know, and that was a surreal kind of moment. But yeah, I feel like Jay Wheeler now. And I do PMA, which is positive mental attitude. I do it every morning with my prayers. And I put the positive out into the universe and it comes back. And I swear by it. That's what I do every single day. And that, like that, with a combination of really good friends and a fantastic support network. You know, I've got a fantastic doctor. I've got a fantastic CPN. So, and obviously my SAFA rep as well. And SAFA, if I can just say that... what SAFA did last year, they used me as their Christmas campaign. So they used the story and the artwork and stuff. And I ended up designing SAFA's Christmas card for 2016. And also the story itself raised just over £70,000.
Wow.
Just that story alone for SAFA. So I was made up.
That's SAFA, SSAFA, if you want to find out more about that. It's a military charity. You also picked up the Creative Recovery Award at the Merseyside Recovery Awards in 2015
as
well.
That was awesome.
So people are not only obviously enabled you to get into the thing in the first place, but when you started doing it, it turns out you were pretty good. And people are like, actually, you know,
and I just,
you're an artist now.
I don't know, I mean, people say, I don't know, I won't put myself in that thing. I would just say, look, I'm just a messenger. That's all it. I'm just a messenger. I mean, now I'm working with a fantastic photographer, Karen O'Donnell. She's absolutely amazing. So she helps capture now. So where before I would just do the love tag and get off and take a photo of the actual love tag, now I've got someone that's actually documenting me doing it. So people get to see the bigger picture when it comes to why I do it.
You got any big projects on the horizon?
Yeah.
Big love to spread?
Yeah. For the third year this year, I'm going to be doing Liverpool Loves Festival again. And that's in August. And I'm also doing Blackthorn Festival again in July in Stockport. I've got three events coming up that I'm doing with Freshfield Animal Rescue Centre. The first one being on Easter Monday. So for anyone that wants to come over, what I'll be doing for those free events for Freshfields is raising money specifically for Freshfields. And that's like a personal thing as well for me, because obviously I got my little lady, the Fudge.
The Fudge,
yeah, from there. So, yeah, I've got that coming up. I'm also going out to Barcelona in June. And that, again, has been crowdfunded for me to go out there and do some tagging stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Where are you going to tag in Barca?
Well, it's... Las Ramblas, is it?
Yeah.
That's where I've been told to do it there. So I'm looking forward to that. And literally, I go out and whenever I can go. I mean, I've even come to your studio today with my love stencil and spray paint in the bag, because there's always an opportunity when I'm moving from A to B.
Well, our chief engineer, Carl Dawson, is in that studio next door. Now, if he sees graffiti paint somewhere in this studio, he'll be the one who's kicking it. I think he's shaking his head, but we'll have to find somewhere. We've got a whiteboard behind us.
Yeah,
we'll be able to do it on there. I think. I hope as well. Like I said, you're on Instagram, you're on Twitter, and you're on Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Just throw out a couple of sites that you've done in and around the Merseyside area that people might think, oh, I have seen that.
There's one on Bold Street. There's one round by L1. There's a couple over by Baltic Triangle. But they literally. Even when I look back now, they literally are everywhere. So, I always say, when people say, oh, I found one, and I go, well, you know, did you find love or did love find you?
Hey.
And that's, you know, that's how it's just a beautiful thing.
Jay, it's a brilliant story.
Thank you very much.
And like I say, halfway through the story, you think, where's this story going to go? Because it sounds like you were so, so low, and you had the couch life that you had with the supply run at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't want to be alive, mate.
you know, and the amount of time the police came and stuff and had to kind of save my life and stuff, I didn't want to be alive. But, you know, now I love waking up in the morning and I love challenging myself through the day. You know, I'm on medication on a daily basis, but that's, I've got that now at a nice level. And like I said, I've got a fantastic support network around me. So, you know, yeah, my life is so much better now. So much better. And I've got to say, art, you know, and kind of really pulled it out of me. It really did.
Brilliant. Thank you for getting in contact with us through our Facebook page.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, not a problem at all. It's been brilliant to share your story as well, because it's got such a positive, well, it's an ongoing story. Yeah. I don't want to say it got a positive end, because it sounds like you've got a million more things in the pipeline as well, but we really appreciate you joining us on the programme today, and thanks for sharing. Jay Wheeler on Radio City Talk, Mental Health Monday, every Monday from 2:15. Also available as a podcast or as a download. All the details via the website radiocitytalk.co.uk. We'll get Jay's social media details on our social media as well, and we'll share the podcast as well if you're listening on the podcast. Thank you for downloading and sharing this story with your friends. If you want to do that through social media yourself, tag us in, tag Jay in. He's on there at Love Art Global, and we are at Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.